D-Mace Finnegan and Donick 102.5 The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Finnegan, and David Janes here with you. Pleased to be joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by the Athletics' Mitch Light, as he joins us every Thursday to preview the upcoming weekend in college football. And Mitch, two big games in our state this weekend. Well, one's in our state, the other one's in South Carolina, right, but involves a team in our state. So let's start with Georgia at Tennessee. The big game of the week, College Game Day, will be there, by the way. Candace Parker, the guest picker for Tennessee at College Game Day on Saturday.
Have they named who's going to kick the field goal for the big thing?
I have not seen that yet. We'll have to consult with Pat McAfee. He'll let us know.
My son has a lot of high school friends who attend the University of Tennessee. They could be candidates to kick the field goal.
Now, Mitch, you tell me. I feel like the success rate on those kicks is incredibly high. Is that true? It feels that way.
Do they need to move them back?
Better. This year, we are 2-for-2 and, like, right down the middle. Nothing. So I think there's a lot of young dudes out there, college dudes, who are practicing field goals.
That could be. That could be.
Yeah, but I guess maybe it's the fear of failure. I mean, there's nothing worse than just shanking one on national TV, too. So,
especially with so much money on the line.
Yeah, success rate has improved.
Okay. So let's talk Georgia and Tennessee. The Vols could not have asked for much more from Joey Aguilar at quarterback in their two wins against Syracuse and East Tennessee State. But the task gets that much more difficult this weekend against Georgia's defense. How do you anticipate Aguilar in this matchup? What must he and Josh Heupel do to finally get the Volunteers over the hump and beat the Bulldogs for the first time in nearly 10 years?
Yeah, that's the question. I mean, I know you asked the question, but they have... I was surprised. I knew they had the winning streak. I didn't realize that they'd all been by 14 points or more in four of the last five when both teams were ranked, too. So Georgia's handled some good Tennessee teams and had a lot of success against that offense there. It's going to be more pressure on Joey Aguilar than he's ever faced in college. I mean, I know App State, they played some P4 teams, but Georgia has basically all offseason to prepare for this offense with two – you know, home games against Marshall in Austin Peay. They've been pointing to this game there. So they've got to take care of the ball. I mean, that goes without saying, but you cannot give this Georgia offense, which quite frankly hasn't looked good so far, the short fields. They've got to just, again, take advantage of the opportunities they get if they can force a turnover. But I think that's the nation is watching. We've all seen, there's articles this week nationally about Joey Aguilar in Tennessee, who thinks they won the trade and he's been great and all that. But so the nation will be watching. How can this offense do against an elite defense? Because for all of Georgia's problems, maybe offensively or problems relatively, they still have elite talent on defense.
Mitch, I was incredibly impressed last season, not just that Vanderbilt beat Alabama, but the following week, Vanderbilt went on the road to Kentucky.
Yep.
They were the talk of college football leading into that game against the Wildcats. The Commodores were ripe for a letdown, and they went to Lexington and they won a big game. So that gives me confidence that after Vanderbilt just crushed Virginia Tech in the second half last weekend in Blacksburg, that they can go to South Carolina and pull off an upset. I'm wondering if you had to gauge the upset potential for Vanderbilt at South Carolina, where would you put it?
Well, first of all, as an astute observation, I said last year, you know, because real quick, you know, Vanderbilt didn't shy away from the upset. From the talk, Diego Pavia was on every network. You know, Clark Lee was all over the place. Like, a lot of coaches would kind of say, we've got to focus on Kentucky. We're not doing media. They embraced it. And then the fact that they still went out and played well against Kentucky, that kind of showed maybe culture and all that stuff that Clark Lee has been building. So to your point, I think there's a good chance. You know, it's dangerous at this time of year or any time to do comparative scores. But if you look how Vanderbilt played against Virginia Tech on the road, versus how South Carolina did, you think Vanderbilt might have the better team. South Carolina struggled on offense. They had a special teams touchdown. They didn't pull away until late. So, you know, it's another difficult road environment. Kind of to your point, I think Vanderbilt will be ready to play. I think they won't, you know, be awed by the environment. Now, whether they're good enough to win, that's another thing. But I think this program, this team has shown you enough that they will be ready to play and, you know, it won't – again, won't cave under the circumstances.
Now, Mitch, is this a much win for DeBoer in Alabama? Because out of the last five games dating back to last year, they're three and two, and they lost to Florida State, Michigan, and Ohio State. They beat Auburn in a tough game, and they blew out the Warhawks of Monroe, UNL Monroe. But this game here, should they win? They're playing in Tuscaloosa, yes. But is this a must-win for DeBoer and his coaching staff?
With the caveat that, yeah, they could lose this game and then go on a hot streak and everyone forget, but not really. Yeah, I'm stammering my way through this there. Yes, it's a must-win because Wisconsin's not very good. Their starting quarterback, Billy Edwards, is out, not playing again. Danny O'Neill, a one-time Colorado commitment under Deion Sanders, who transferred from San Diego State, is going to be the quarterback. They struggled on offense in the first game. They struggled on offense in the first half against MTSU last week. So Alabama is a much better team. They took care of business, like you said, last week. With the SEC slate starting soon, they've got to take care of business. They've got to be mature about it and show that they've moved on from that Florida State debacle. So, you know, is DeBoer, would he get fired midseason? No, but if they lose this game, it could be tough to see him coming back from this.
Now, what do you make of the LSU and Florida game? Florida's coming off a horrible loss a couple weeks ago. LSU seems to be on the rise with Nussmeier as their quarterback. But is this a game for Florida's coach where it's a must-win for him?
I wouldn't say that because they've got such a difficult schedule and they'll have opportunities to pick off some big wins later like they did last year. But obviously it's important. We all know Billy Napier's the ebbs and falls, ebbs and flows of his tenure. The thing that concerns me about Florida, you can talk about the spitting and the undiscipline and the penalties, but DJ Lagway and that offense did not really play well last week. They had one touchdown on a drive of 30 yards after a turnover. So that's what concerns me. Like how against, I know South Florida is a good team, but you can only score one offensive touchdown at home against South Florida. What leads you to believe you can go on the road at LSU and put up enough points? Because we know LSU is going to score. So Florida is a difficult team to figure out because, again, they did a good job last year staying together and played well later in the year. But I don't really see a lot of scenarios where Florida wins this game.
Mitch Light is one of the college football editors for The Athletic. And Mitch, let me bounce back to that Georgia-Tennessee matchup. You alluded to it before. There was a really good article written by, I think it was Seth Emerson from your staff, talking about Georgia and Gunnar Stockton specifically, where in these first two games, they haven't really looked good. They haven't proven that they could attack down the field with the passing game. We know he can run. We know he's pretty gutty. We know they can play defense. But what about how that matchup looks against Tennessee?
Yeah, I think their longest pass play last week was 19 yards against Austin Peay. Now, they've been banged up on the offensive line. I think the latest I saw, they were hoping to get right tackle Ernest Green and right guard Warren Gaston back, which obviously, if you have, I don't care who you are, but if you're out two starters in your offensive line, that's going to set you back, especially earlier in the year. Yeah, I'm really interested to see. They upgraded in the portal in the offseason at wide receiver. Remember last year, this team was kind of plagued with drops. You know, Zachariah Branch is a former five-star who transferred from USC, who's always been like a great athlete, good return guy, but had never really blossomed as a wide receiver. Well, he's leading the team, only two games, six catches, 112 yards. He is a big play guy to watch. But what I'm looking for at a Gunnar Stockton, which I always look for in quarterbacks, is a guy like him, he's athletic, but on third and 10, third and what, eight, what does the offensive staff trust him to do? Do they trust him to drop back and make the reads and make the big play, or do they do a quarterback draw and stay real conservative? So that's what I'll be watching in this game. I know he's a veteran. He's been in the offense. He's played some. But how much does this staff trust him? And if they do and he plays well, that's obviously a great sign for Georgia going forward.
We just had a really good conversation with Eli Stowers, and he was talking about the frustration of last year, especially on offense. He felt like the defense was keeping them in the game, but the offense really didn't do their job. I'm curious, up front on both sides of the line of scrimmage, Vanderbilt appears that there are signs that what they have done to upgrade the offensive line and the defensive line looks like it's quite a bit better than it was last year. What about that matchup at South Carolina?
Yeah, the offensive line obviously was a veteran group last year. They lost several guys, and they went to the portal, and they got several more. You know, it's an old group, fourth, fifth, sixth-year guys. And I, obviously they played very well against Virginia Tech. The concern coming off the Charleston Southern game was, remember, at the end of the first half, they had actually trouble blocking Charleston Southern on some pass protection. They had two or three holding penalties. There might have been a hold or two last week, but that really wasn't a problem. They were obviously dominant in the ground game there. South Carolina, you know, last year dominated this game in the line of scrimmage. They were the best team Vanderbilt played in the line of scrimmage. Vanderbilt couldn't block them. Dylan Stewart is back. He's one of the best players in the country, but they lost other guys on that defensive line there. So that's the key. Can Vanderbilt block, move the pile, which they couldn't do last year against South Carolina, and run the ball, which obviously opens up the play action and opens up some option game and all that stuff. So that's there. That's the part of the offensive line. Defensive line, it's more like they just added a lot of bodies. They have a lot of depth. I don't know if they've got any real standouts on the defensive line, but they added several guys, even after in the spring portal, fifth, fourth, and fifth-year guys. So they can rotate a lot and keep guys fresh. I think you saw that at Virginia Tech. I think they wore them out in the second half. They got at, you know, once they knew Kyron Jones had to throw the ball, they just teed off on him and had no trouble getting through that Virginia Tech offensive line.
Why do you think, because it scares the heck out of me, because we saw what Lenora Sellers did down the stretch last year. He just went to a whole new level, and there's a lot of Heisman talk, deservedly so. But so far, that they haven't really clicked offensively. What do you think has been the issue so far?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I don't know how much I buy into, like, catch people off guard last year. I mean, coaches are smart. They watch a ton of film. So I don't know if that's it. You know, I watched the Virginia Tech game, and I thought Virginia Tech was pretty good up front defensively and got after them. There's a lot of people who watch more film and understand the sport better than I do who say Sellers is still reluctant to throw the ball over the middle. You know, that's kind of what people saw in film from him last year. So maybe defenses are taking that away or forcing him to do things that he's not comfortable with, making it more of an emphasis on tackling him, which sounds simple, but that's Vanderbilt struggled with that last year there. So, you know, they got off to a slow start last year, like their first game, I think it's UAB. They only scored like 14 points and then took off there. So it's a fair point. They have not looked great offensively, but it's also still very early.
I want to ask you about the Notre Dame-Texas A&M matchup. Notre Dame, of course, they lost that first game, tight one at Miami. So there'll be some urgency, of course. And Texas A&M has now got, of course, a kid out of Nashville and Marcel Reed who looked pretty good. He got loose last week, put up good numbers against Utah State. It was a really good game last year down in Texas. What do you think of this matchup?
Yeah, on paper, it's kind of a troubling matchup in some degree for Texas A&M because they have – I didn't watch – either the first two games against UTSA and Utah State. I mean, I watched a few plays of Utah State, but they have really struggled against the run. They've given up a lot of rushing yards. If you look at Notre Dame with those two tailbacks, especially Jeremiah Love, that's what they do well. Now, they didn't run the ball enough. Notre Dame fans will tell you in that Miami game, I would expect them to do that. I think C.J. Carr, after his week one at Miami, would be a lot more comfortable in his second game at home. So I think the matchups, from my angle, favor Notre Dame. I think they're the better team. And I think they win at home. You know, Marcel Reed, I don't know if it was his first start, but he won a game at Florida last year. So he has played well on the road. I don't think that will be an issue. I just think Notre Dame right now is the better team.
Mitch Light of The Athletic has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, helping us preview the weekend ahead in college football. Mitch, always a pleasure, my friend. We'll catch up next week.
All right, take care, guys.
Mitch Light on the program. 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Coming up next, we told you at the top of the show that J.C. Latham will not play Sunday against the L.A. Rams. He has ruled himself out with a hip injury. The injury report has not been unveiled. There is another key player whose status is in question, and we will discuss that coming up next. Also, if you want to win a pair of tickets to see Papa Roach at the First Bank Amphitheater Wednesday, October 1st, be listening at the end of the upcoming segment. I will give you the cue to call at 615-737-1025, and you can win a pair of tickets to see Papa Roach at the First Bank Amphitheater on Wednesday, October 1st. 615-737-1025. Headed to the Titans game this Sunday. Be sure to stop by John Bon Jovi's before the Titans take on the Rams for the 102.5 The Game pregame show with Big Joe Dubin, Chris Sanders, and our very own Derek Mason from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. The pregame show is brought to you by Parman Tractor and Equipment, Old National Bank, Circa Sportsbook Kentucky, and Tennessee Brew Works. D-Mace Vingen and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen here with you live at First Horizon Park. Sounds and Stripers tonight. Last homestand of the season. So if you haven't been to a game yet this season, you want to squeeze one more in before the Sounds end the season, you've got a couple of days left. Come on out to the ballpark. First pitch tonight is at 6:35. As you just heard Papa Roach, at the end of this segment, I will give you a cue to call, 615-737-1025, and you can win a pair of tickets to see Papa Roach at the First Bank Amphitheater on Wednesday, October 1st. So, as we mentioned off the top of the show, and I'll mention it again, J.C. Latham is out with a hip injury for Sunday's matchup against the L.A. Rams. But there is another player who, if I had to guess, will also not be playing on Sunday against the L.A. Rams, and that is Tavondre Sweat. Tavondre Sweat did not practice yesterday or today. He was listed on the injury report with an ankle injury. I just looked it up. Jim Wyatt tweeted the injury report yesterday at 6:23 p.m., so shortly after our show went off the air. So I'm guessing we will not have the injury report before we get off the air at 6 o'clock. But the fact that he did not practice 2 days in a row with an ankle injury suggests to me he's not going to play.
I think we'll know more tomorrow. I still would hold out a little hope. I don't know how bad the ankle is. However, even if he plays, I think we're still going to only get a percentage of what he really can be, because he's still catching up from the other two ailments. This is the third thing that's happened to him.
He had an abdominal injury. He had his tonsils taken out, and now he is dealing with an ankle injury. He barely participated in training camp and the preseason. He played 40.8% of the snaps in Denver. He had two tackles. He stuffed Bo Nix on a 4th-and-1 late in the fourth quarter. That is what Tavondre Sweat is all about. But I'm wondering how concerned we should be about Tavondre Sweat's health moving forward. As Willie said, he's been dealing with multiple ailments since the start of training camp. Did not play much in Denver. I'm going to say he's not going to play on Sunday. Willie is still going to hold out hope that he will.
I've seen people not practice.
Right. Dan Moore had an ankle injury last week, did not practice once, and then he played. But Tavondre Sweat has not practiced each of the past 2 days with an ankle injury. So, Derek, how concerned are you? How concerned should we be about the health of Tavondre Sweat?
I'm not as concerned as I am about what's going on with J.C. Latham. I'm more concerned about J.C. Latham and his potential of missing more than one game than Tavondre Sweat. I think eventually they haven't ruled him out, so that's a good thing. They want to see if he can, if he continues to move around. And I'm sure he's still getting some type of conditioning, albeit it may be sort of, one that may be a pool or some type of, they have these treadmills where, you run, but you're doing it minus your body weight, but you're still getting the conditioning. It's taking a lot of the body weight, the pounding off of you. So maybe he's doing some conditioning that way. But until they say he's out, then I do hope that, and I hate to say it, I hate to put it this way on the pitch count, because I don't want the same thing to happen last week to happen this week where one guy
thinks he was basically on a pitch count last week.
Yeah, he was on a pitch count last week. And I think this is just, in addition to him not practicing a lot and not playing during the preseason, him dealing with what he didn't have, tonsils.
He had his tonsil removed. He had an ab injury.
So he's
and now
had,
he has an ankle injury.
He's had some injuries. And for a big fella like that, man, anytime it takes you away from the field and it takes you away from conditioning, it's not good. But I do hope that they, you know, find some way where he can play and be productive. I only want him to play if he can be productive in the time that he plays. If he can't be productive, there's no sense of throwing him out there.
And they have not offered any detail on his
Which
ankle.
Makes me think he will play.
Well, maybe, but Adam, you could be dead on right. You could be right that he's – if it's a high ankle sprain, we know that's multiple weeks. That's not just this week. So there's a lot of range of an ankle issue, right? And as you said, Derek, a big guy like that, leverage on the ankle is huge. I'm just really concerned that this stuff is – he's going to be chasing this stuff all year, and he hasn't – this sets him back again. He's trying to catch up from basically missing all of training camp, and that is not an easy thing to do.
And I mentioned this – I believe it was last week, but I'll mention it again. I don't have the numbers for Sunday, but he was incredibly impactful last season when he was on the field – in terms of helping the Titans' run defense. The NFL said that the Titans' run defense held opponents to 4.2 yards per carry when Tavondre Sweat was on the field, which would have been the eighth fewest in the NFL. Without Sweat, those numbers jumped to 5.3 yards per carry, worst in the NFL. So Tavondre Sweat, he did not record sacks, but when it came to stuffing the run, he did what he needed to do.
From a team that prides themselves on what? Stopping the run. That's
right.
Where it starts first.
Right.
And if your best run stopper outside of Jeffrey Simmons, and I think because of the big body and his ability to move, he may be better as a run stopper than Jeffrey Simmons is. And if he's not in the game, you are going to be, you know, not that good at that particular thing.
He also, I think we all were pleasantly surprised how often he was on the field, even on passing downs. And he, you know, for a guy his size, you know, he's not the ideal pass rusher. It's not the best thing. He's never going to be, you know, known as a pass rusher. But the fact that they had him in that high of percentage of the plays put him ahead of what I thought he would be last year.
It was roughly 2/3, if I recall correctly.
Yeah. And
of the snaps.
So he appears to be, at his best, somebody who's not just a situational run-stopping specialist, right? I think he can be a three-down guy if he can continue to develop. But that's the problem with what's going on with him now. He's had some setbacks here. The good thing is, I do think I'm buying into what Denard Wilson is saying, that they have improved their depth on that part of the front. They've added a couple other guys. Joseph Day's a pretty good player. You know, Shy Tuttle is now in the mix. They've got a couple other guys that are useful. So hopefully they can get by until Meatloaf gets back up to speed.
And another thing to note, I don't know what's going on with all of these ankle injuries, but three of the Rams' starting offensive linemen did not practice yesterday with ankle injuries. Right tackle Rob Havenstein, right guard Kevin Dotson, and left guard Steve Avila. All three did not practice yesterday with ankle injuries. And we don't know what the Rams injury report is yet. But that would be a prime opportunity. Imagine if Tavondre Sweat can play. And we know that Jeffrey Simmons is available. And Simmons had a great game, minus the penalty at the end. But he had a great game in terms of affecting the quarterback, created multiple turnovers off of his pressures. I'm just imagining Sweat and Simmons against a patchwork, potentially, Rams offensive line. Again, three of their starting offensive linemen for the Rams did not practice yesterday. All of them are dealing with ankle injuries. We'll see if they practice today when that injury report comes out in a couple of hours. But what could have been a great matchup for the Titans, assuming those three linemen weren't available, not having Sweat potentially takes the bite out of that.
I'm with D-Mace, and I'm a little more worried about not having Latham than not having Sweat on Sunday.
That's fair.
But I am curious, D-Mace, if the Titans defense can play well enough, especially aided by improved special teams, where they can maybe stay in games. They're a 5.5-point underdog, which is a pretty big number for a home dog. Mm-hmm. But can they, week in and week out, stay in games with defense and special teams better than last year? I'm curious about that. That's how you take a little pressure off of Cam Ward.
But the unfortunate part about it is that, as we all know, as the season goes, injuries occur. And you're talking about a team that doesn't have depth already. Players are going to get hurt. And if you don't have a complete team, meaning a good offense, good defense, and some guys behind them, if you're relying so heavy on one side of the ball, what happens when injuries occur? Because injuries, if you say if a defensive player goes down, a few of them, well, that affects not only your defense, but it affects your special teams as well. You got a few offensive players goes down. Maybe they're not starters, but they're because they play special teams as well. So, to me, the concern is, yes, we can lean on the defense and special teams because I've seen teams do that before. But what happens when those injuries start to occur? And now that thing that you've leaned on so heavy becomes weak. You know, they need to get the offense up to speed. And how do you do that? The offensive line got to block better. And are they? With JC being out, if I'm betting, no, it's not going to look better than what it did last week, knowing that JC's out and Cushenberry's still working his way through it. So that's when everybody else has to chip in and do the theme of this week should be do your job. Just do the job that we asked you to do. That should be the theme of the week, because if you do your job and the quarterback is doing his, we're going to be all right. But if the quarterback is doing his and you ain't doing yours, or the offensive line is doing his and quarterback, you're not reading it right, or the receiver's not doing their job, offensive line, you ain't blocking, we ain't gonna have consistent good plays. The theme should be this week, do your job and we'll be okay.
Isn't that trademarked by the New England Patriots?
Well, Belichick tried
University of North Carolina, yeah. Isn't it? Didn't they get the trade? Oh.
Do your job. Titans version.
Okay. That is fair. My concern with Sweat, I'll echo what Willie said earlier. Just the litany, ding, of ailments that...
Why didn't you bring the bell?
I need a travel bell.
Travel the bell.
I need a travel bell. It needs a little case and everything like that. Anyway, the injuries, the ailments that Tavondre Sweat has dealt with already... since the beginning of training camp, an ab injury, a tonsillectomy, now an ankle injury, and we don't know what kind of ankle injury. It could be just a sprained ankle. It could be a high ankle sprain. When you're a big boy like Tavondre Sweat, I can only imagine the weight and the pressure that puts on your ankles. I agree with you, Willie, that just I'm concerned that Sweat is going to be, to borrow a term that Peter Laviolette used to use all the time, he's going to be trying to catch a moving train.
Yes.
All season long. And I think that will negatively affect the Titans, depending on what happens here.
I could not agree more. That is a term that's thrown out in hockey a lot. And I think I've seen a lot of players through the years. You can see it in their game. I've used in baseball the example of another Nashvillian, Mookie Betts. He got a really weird illness. He lost like 25 pounds, and it's taken him till now. If you watch, he's now playing like Mookie Betts, but it took him 4 months to really catch up. He was hitting 230, which is so far from his standard. But you could see these types of things sometimes when you lose a lot of weight. You're trying to get it back. You're also trying to get in playing shape, and you've got a couple other things you're dealing with. That's a lot on somebody's plate.
Yeah,
that's a lot of meatloaf on the plate.
That is a hefty portion of meatloaf. 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Let's ask this question, because we seem to be in a bit of a disagreement here. Whose injury are you more concerned about, J.C. Latham's hip or Tavondre Sweat's ankle? 615-737-1025. We're talking long-term over the course of the season, not necessarily Sunday against the Rams. Latham out, no word on Sweat. Whose injury are you more concerned about, Latham's hip or Sweat's ankle? 615-737-1025. Jackson on our text line says, the last time Papa Roach had a hit song, D-Mace was returning a free kick after a safety for a touchdown against the Jags in the AFC Championship
game. Yeah.
That could be true. But you can still win a pair of tickets to see Papa Roach on October 1st at First Bank Amphitheater by being caller number 3 right now at 615-737-1025. If you want to see Papa Roach in a few weeks, October 1st, First Bank Amphitheater, caller number 3, 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you live at First Horizon Park. The sun is shining. The tarp will be off the field shortly. So if you're looking for something to do tonight, the Sounds, their final homestand of the season continues tonight against Gwinnett. First pitch at 6:35. One texter, Justin from Greenbrier, says, speaking of meatloaf, don't miss your chance to support Chase McCabe and Jake Lyman at the cow milking competition at the Nashville Fairgrounds this evening.
What?
This is the first time hearing of this.
Oh, okay.
Who would you put your money on in a cow milking contest? Chase McCabe or Jake Lyman?
You know, Jake Lyman is he's full of surprises.
Yeah.
He's the youngster. He's a little bit of the dark horse. We don't know. But, I mean,
I'm taking Jake.
I think I got to go with Jake.
I'm taking Jake.
Look, okay, Chase, if you're listening.
Chase is the native to the land in this area. That should give him a leg up.
But I don't. Chase ain't been milking no cow. He ain't milking no cow. I don't think Jake has either, but I know Chase. He ain't milking no cow, man. Chase ain't milking no cow.
That's not a euphemism for something, is it?
No, I'm just saying. I can't see Chase milking a cow.
Okay.
I just can't
see. Well, I'm sure we'll have video footage of this somewhere.
His track record in some of these exhibitions in the past, like curling,
exactly.
Shooting three-pointers.
Yes.
At least with this, though, it doesn't require athletic ability. If we're
coordination, it may take coordination.
Some dexterity, perhaps.
You know what? Fair enough.
I feel like there might be some, you know, some talent that
you got to bend.
You got to bring something to the table.
You know, you got to bring a little strength. I'm pretty sure.
Okay, technique. Well. I'm
talking about old school milking cows. I'm not talking about the new way where you put the machine under there and all that stuff.
We're talking about old school.
That's chased by a mile if it's the new way.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Well, I am participating in some sort of between inning competition tonight at the Sounds game. So hopefully it won't be cow milking. Hopefully it'll be something.
Is it a potato sack race, probably?
Oh, my
possibly?
Goodness. If you're looking to watch me fall flat in my face in front of thousands of people, that is, I can't think of a better way to get people to come to First
Horizon
Park.
Is it the game where you have to run, you know, 90 feet and put the uniform on and then come back and you know, run the 90 feet in the uniform?
I'm hoping it's like a math test or a spelling bee or something.
I don't think so. I think it's going to be action. It's going to involve some.
He's scaring you.
I'm a little nervous now. Find out later.
Do you think you could beat the freeze? Remember in in Atlanta where they had the sprinter out
Hell
there, the
no.
freeze?
No.
That's one of my favorite ones.
I could
You don't think you could hold off the freeze?
No.
No. Because you get, what, a 50-yard?
You get a big head start.
Yeah, you get a big head start,
man.
So listen.
You need to believe in yourself, Adam.
Hold on. If the freeze started at home plate and you were, say, right corner field, you couldn't beat the freeze all the way around?
I think I would be huffing and puffing.
Hey, Willie, Adam will fall right at midfield, like in the middle, right there.
He wouldn't be the first.
Okay. Yeah,
he wouldn't be the first. A lot of people have gone down against the freeze. Not just lost the race, but I mean gone down.
Before we get back on track, I just have to read this text from Joey from Bellevue. He says, I'm taking Chase. He keeps saying he doesn't have a girlfriend, LOL. All right,
move on.
Let's move on.
Next topic?
Next topic. All right. Man. So we're talking Titans injuries. J.C. Latham has a hip injury that will prevent him from playing on Sunday against the Rams. Devondre Sweat has an ankle injury that prevented him from practicing each of the past 2 days. No word on Sweat's status for the Rams game. But I wanted to know from all of you, which injury concerns you more? And it's a landslide. Every vote for J.C. Latham. And I'm not surprised by that. And to be clear, by talking about my concern for Tavondre Sweat, I'm not minimizing J.C. Latham's injury. That's I agree with all of you. I think that is much more important. I just wanted to take a moment to talk about Sweat as well, because most of the attention, injury-wise, is on J.C. Latham. One texter says, Latham is the easy answer when you have uh-oh as his backup. It's actually Udo or uh-oh or Rutro, depending on the situation. It's going to make Ward's life very, very hard if Latham is out for an extended time. Matt from Camden also says Latham because the Titans' offensive line depth is not great and you don't want to get Cam Ward killed every week. One texter, Willie, says a hip on a massive human is tough.
We don't know the details about the hip, but what concerns me is he tried to play, and there was the one play, I think it was the third down,
he got
right before
the
half.
He got off the line.
He looked like he couldn't move at all. He was fighting it, and it was getting worse as the game went along, and obviously he didn't finish the game. So this has been out there, and that's the kind of thing, if it lingers, you need J.C. Latham to be himself. Like, battling through a hip injury, that's not good.
No.
Let's see.
It's one thing to throw that, you know, put the club on, you get a broken finger or something for a lineman, you put all that tape around, you look like this big ball. Like, but your hips, your knees, your ankles, those are hips especially.
Yeah, it's
tough. It's a leverage game.
Before Joey made an inappropriate comment that I read aloud, he said, Latham's hip for sure. That hurts the team more since the depth players at that position shouldn't be on the field. The O-line can't catch a break. And he told reporters he's going to prepare this week the same way he would if he were playing in terms of mental reps and watching film and eating right and all of those things. And I agree with what Derek said earlier on Latham, that better manage it now, keep him out of the lineup as a precaution so that it doesn't get worse over the course of the season. But this is a situation that if Latham is out for an extended period of time, the Titans offensive line, which, look, the Titans offensive line had a rough go of it on Sunday. Cam Ward was under pressure quite a bit. I believe he was under pressure, depending on which statistical service you use, may have been under pressure more than any other quarterback in the NFL in week one. Sacked six times. I believe two of those sacks were credited to the offensive line by Pro Football Focus. So I sort of with the same thing we were talking about with Cam Ward and how people are perceiving his debut, I'm trying to place the offensive line's performance in the proper context. Same situation. Tough environment. Ferocious pass rush. So I think the offensive line definitely struggled. But considering the circumstances, you know, I may, for lack of a better phrase, give him a pass in week one, but Latham's injury status is worth monitoring for sure.
Of course, because, you know, just like your left tackle, you know, your right tackle is a key position on a team. And for the Titans, with a team that is dealing with not much depth, you got to try to keep as many people healthy on your offensive line as you possibly can. And right off the bat, they're dealing with, you know, essentially two injuries, because you're dealing with Cushenberry's injury from last year. He's still managing it. And you know he's not 100% or fully ready to go. And now you got to deal with J.C. Latham at right tackle, albeit with the new right guard learning the offense in this system under this head coach. So, you know, the one place they didn't need an injury was the offensive line, and that's the first place they occur an injury that's going to be detrimental. Now you look out there and say, well, what are some free agent, you know, tackles that are out there? You look, not many that I see right now.
McCabe.
Raven Clark. Chris Dubin, Hubbard. Connor Galvin. And you talk about, these are guys with, you know, two of them got over 5 years of experience and the other 1 year.
There's nobody. There's nobody ever,
you're right.
Lets
there's
a
nobody,
tackle go. It
there's nobody
happen.
Out there that the Titans can. Now, you know, if this continues to be either one or two things are going to happen. Aside from J.C. Latham getting healthy, either the young kid, you know, gets on that treadmill, gets on that bike, and he starts to, you know, pedal real fast and get up to speed, you know, get up to speed. Or they're going to have to scour, you know, other teams to try to get – and they may have to give up a late-round pick to try to get a tackle that can come in here and play. You know, give up a sixth, seventh-round pick to get a guy with some experience. Because right now, I mean
– that worked so well for them in the past.
Latham, but, I mean, this is where they're at. Yeah. This is where they're at.
They have the number one. Depth. They
yeah,
do
exactly.
have the number one waiver pickup. But I just
– So if he's going to be through a trade or the young guy who they threw in there last week, he's going to get back.
I just don't think at this point anybody's going to waive a legit tackle.
That's why I said it has to be through a trade.
They may have to. And this is the dilemma when, you know, you're trying to build a roster. You need those draft picks.
Yeah. But who's going to be dumb enough to give up a tackle?
Yeah. Nobody's going to trade you a tackle.
Because they could be in that same situation in 2 weeks.
This is how you
and
end
now
up,
they need a tackle.
This is how you end up with the Dennis Dailies of the world. Whenever I'm
– Diller's still out there, is he?
Ooh. Can you imagine?
That's like saying Freddy Krueger. No. Dennis Dillard. No. Please.
Actually,
no.
Andre Dillard was Andre placed Dillard, on season-ending injured reserve about a month
ago. Oh,
well,
they can't
cross him off
get
the list.
Yeah, cross him off the list.
And we're not celebrating that he's injured.
No, we're not.
We just.
I'm just saying.
Don't want him here anymore. Yeah.
He wasn't a good player for the Titans.
Oh.
Andre Dillard, not Dennis Dillard. I was thinking
Dennis,
Dailey, Kelly.
Dennis Kelly, Dennis Dailey,
yeah.
Andre Dillard.
Yes.
Nicholas Petit-Frere, Jalen Duncan, the list goes on and on.
No, Dennis Kelly, Kelly was pretty good.
Yeah, he was.
He was a good swing tackle for
that was him. That was a solid trade.
Exactly.
That was an excellent trade.
Doriel Green backup for Dennis Kelly.
I was like, why would you give up on a guy? Maybe there's still a chance that. And that ended up being an excellent trade for Robinson. Mm-hmm.
Jared from Spring Hill on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, said, should we just get behind the idea of benching Cam Ward? Since he has no weapons, Latham may be out a while. If he's the most important person and Callahan can't coach him up, meaning Ward is the most important person, why waste it and take the risk of hurting Ward too?
Look, let's check back in a few weeks because it can – Marcus Mariota's rookie year. Mm-hmm. If I remember correctly.
Started off great.
He had his moments, but they by the end of the year, they could not field a real offensive line. Mm-hmm. And I can remember Zach Mettenberger starting some games. He got destroyed.
So these may be the growing pains that a young quarterback have to go through. But, man, oh, man, haven't they had enough growing pains, you know?
It's really all about survival for Cam Ward. It's the Troy Aikman, the Peyton Manning. When you are the first overall pick and you enter in as the opening day starter for the last place team in the league, these pitfalls are all over the place and it's hard to avoid them. And here we are in week two, they're already dealing with something.
That's why I believe that the hardest group outside of the quarterback. But the hardest group to develop, you know, and retain is the offensive line. Because even if you draft them in the first round, a lot of those guys still take time. And then you gotta link them to two or three guys that may have already been there or two guys that have been there and another guy has to come in from somewhere else and learn the system. So it's going to take a good year and a half for that offensive line, that chain to really link together. That's what people don't understand. Like, it's not one game. It's not two games. It's not five games. It takes offensive line, like, seasons to really get to where they know all each one, one another. That's why when I look back at the years where the Titans were, they were, you know, at their prime at running. They had offensive lines that had been together, that had been through the battles together, that understood one another. It was almost like we didn't even have to talk to communicate. You look at when Chris Johnson rushed for his 2,000 yards. That offensive line had been together. You know, it's going to take for those guys to be together for a minute for you to start truly reaping the rewards of how good an offensive line can be. And unfortunate, the Titans have, they've already started off on the wrong foot with their right tackle getting hurt, and then obviously Cushenberry still working his way through the injury he had last year.
615-737-1025. We'll take your reaction to J.C. Latham's hip injury. He is out Sunday against the L.A. Rams. Still no word on the status of Tavondre Sweat for Sunday. He did not practice again, did not practice yesterday, listed with an ankle injury. No injury report yet. Probably won't get it before the end of the show. We'll also take your thoughts on Cam Ward's performance last week and if the praise for Ward's performance has gone a little overboard. 615-737-1025. But coming up next, Cam Ward will make his official Nissan Stadium debut on Sunday. And we are all quite curious what the crowd will be like at Nissan Stadium on Sunday. So we'll discuss that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.